rate my preparation for this episode because, on one hand, I watched it, but I was, like, on cold medicine.
Right.
As I still am.
Sure.
And I was in cold medicine, and I was tired, and I didn't take any notes. But, on the other hand, I watched Saturday Night Live.
What?
Yeah, it's true.
The Adam Driver episode? The actual most recent episode?
Or the first half of it.
Okay, you're really stretching the definition of watching SNL.
Well, I mean, I've watched definitely not to Weekend. I didn't watch Weekend Update, but...
Oh, my God.
I watched, like, a bunch of the opening sketches and all the ones that people said were actually good. I watched all those.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
You picked not the best one to watch of all of the ones that you could have watched, but hey, you know.
Yeah, I want to get back into watching SNL. I like
it. It's really easy to do.
Well,
as someone who does it, it's very easy to do.
You watch it live on Saturday, right?
Sometimes. Well, I used to. It's tougher now that... Because I'm usually over at my GF's place on Saturdays.
I like that you're not going to say what her name is.
Huh?
I like that you're not going to say what her name is.
I like to protect people's anonymity. But, so I'm over at Molly's place, right? Oh, fuck. And,
Are you out of that?
No. Okay. They got rid of cable.
Yeah.
So now it's a little tougher.
You know,
but it's
just
Hulu.
Letting you know. NBC is not a cable station. You can watch it for free.
I know, but you have to connect the coaxial cable, and they don't do that. And I'm not going to be like, hey, guys, let's quick like connect the coaxial cable just for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if they have one set up, like, right by their television or not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you still watch it every Sunday, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only one I have not watched in recent memory is the Trump episode, but we've talked about that.
And that's for, like, weird ideological reasons.
Well, kind of, and also I just knew that I was not going to enjoy it for, like, even if they had funny sketches, I wouldn't enjoy it for other reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyways, I like the Adam Driver one all right. I liked...
The undercover boss... One.
I didn't like that one at all. I didn't think that one was good.
See, I thought that one was all right. A lot of people really love it. And I'm like, okay, I get it.
I get why. It's just like pure fan service.
Well, I mean, is it, though?
But it's like, it's popular because it was the Star Wars sketch.
Yeah. I think that's why it got big. Like, I think that's why people really latched onto it, is because it was Star Wars. I don't know.
I don't...
Like, you can't have the main villain of the most recent Star Wars movie and not have a Star Wars sketch.
Yeah, but I think you can do it a lot better.
I'm not saying it couldn't have been improved. That's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I wasn't a fan. I didn't like it.
Alright, you sourpuss.
I just think, like, the movie did such a good job of exploring how, like, angry and angsty is, and in a funny way. The movie's funny.
Yeah, true.
So it just kind of did the joke of the... It, like, I feel like the big laughs were, like, him doing something... Like, the biggest laugh was him, like, force-pushing Bobby Moynihan. And it's like, he already did a bunch of, like comical freakouts in the movie. Like, when he's just, like, wailing on the wall...
And they have those stormtroopers be like, hey, what's that? Oh, and they just nope, I'm not going in there.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And then they did it.
Yeah. That's true. I think another reason why I think it works, even if it might not be like, you know, the funniest Star Wars Kylo Ren sketch you can think of, is that it kind of was, because there are still a lot of people who are like, Kylo Ren sucks. You know, and like it was kind of addressing that with Bobby Moynihan's character of.
Oh, I didn't really get that. I didn't know people thought Kylo Ren sucked.
Oh, there are still people out there who are like, yeah, he sucks. He's nothing compared to Darth Vader. Not really getting that he's, it's kind of the point. Like, he is not Darth Vader. I don't know. I can go off on a whole other thing about that, but
please.
No, no one wants to hear that.
All right.
No one wants to hear that.
But still, I, but yeah, I like this. I actually like the football sketch. The
with Pete Davidson's legs.
Yeah, the part that really blew my mind was Kenan Thompson. Kenan is so really good.
Huh?
The shot of him holding a Bible and I think
gun.
Was it a hammer or a gun? It was a gun.
It's a gun.
And he's weighing the options. That's super super funny.
Yeah, no, I see that.
And then I feel like there was one, the Golden Globes one, that was good too.
Was that early in the episode or was that later in the episode?
I think that was a late episode sketch. But I looked it up because I heard good things about it and it was good.
Yeah, no, I liked it. It's no Santa Baby, but it's good.
Yeah, I saw like on Hulu the screenshot of the what do they call it? The 5-to-1 slot. The 12:55 slot or whatever.
What?
The final sketch of the night.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's called 5-to-1 is what they call it traditionally. Like, it's, you know, sure, usually it's a weirder sketch.
Yeah.
And it was, like, old, like, video-y. And I was like, oh, this is Kyle Mooney and Beck Bennett. And then I just didn't click it.
Wait, old video-y. Let's see. Is it labeled on Hulu the 5-to-1 skit? I'm going to look it up now because I'm curious. Because
It's not what it's labeled as, but I mean, that's just like the name for...
Oh, that's just what... Yeah, okay.
You've never heard of the term 5-to-1 sketch?
No, I know what you mean when you say it. Sorry, I'm getting really defensive here.
I know. I like it. Well, I was reading a lot about SNL today and yesterday. I was reading about the new, you know, that new FXX show, Man Seeking Woman.
Man Seeking Woman, with, what is his name? Eric Andre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jay Baruchel.
Baruchel.
Yeah. I like everyone involved a lot. So I was like checking it out and the creator is this dude who was the youngest ever writer on SNL.
Oh,
He used to write for the Harvard Lampoon. He was the head of the Harvard Lampoon. And he wrote with Jost back there.
Hey.
Which I actually didn't know that Jost was a Harvard guy.
Okay, there is, if you get the inkling to actually watch Update, there is a good Colin Jost joke in there.
I'll check it out. Yeah. I like Jost.
Yeah, he's fine.
I like Shade too. Yeah. Anyways, but this dude, he's like 30 years old or something like that, but he looks like he's 15. And there was a... some article about him where he was like talking about his favorite sketches and stuff. Man, he wrote some really weird sketches. Like a lot of SNL ones that ended in like the 5-to-1 slot.
Yeah.
He did this amazing sketch, about, presenting this movie called Rocket Dogs. Have you seen that sketch? It's probably, this is like 4 or 5 years ago.
Huh. Maybe it would have been too long to actually remember.
And you find out in, it's like this kid's movie called Rocket Dog, and you find out that like hundreds of dogs died in the making of the movie.
That does sound kind of familiar.
Oh man, it's really, really funny. but he did a bunch of really weird stuff.
Sure.
So anyways,
I think the skit that you might be thinking of, because if I remember correctly, there wasn't a Kyle Mooney, Beck Bennett bit. I think you might be thinking of Porn Doctor.
Is that it?
It's the only thing where the thumbnail is kind of...
Are you telling me to Google Porn Doctor?
Vaseline. What?
Are you telling me to Google Porn Doctor right now?
Yes.
Okay.
No, it's, but it's a continuation of the A.D. Bryant bit from, the Amy Schumer episode.
I would not know.
You son of a bitch. It's just, you're actively picking the best episodes to not watch.
I'll go back and watch it someday.
No,
I'm a busy guy. I like talking about it though. I want to hear what you think about it.
It's not completely alien to me because I listen to the How Did This Get Made podcast, and I never watch any of the movies that they're talking about.
Yeah,
but I'm not as good of a conversationalist as they are. I can't imagine how this is fun.
I like talking about it. I like hearing about what happened on SNL.
Oh my god.
Oh man, actually, I was a big SNL watcher, you know, prior to this season. I really realized it today or yesterday when I was watching, and I was like, oh, Beck Bennett's on SNL.
What?
I know. He's been on for like 4 years.
Yeah.
I know. I felt really
You're surprised that he's still on?
That he was on it. I forgot that he was on it.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So, okay, you started watching SNL. You're like, hey, who's this Beck Bennett guy? He's funny.
I knew who Beck Bennett was before then.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what-y-da.
I mean,
Mike, I know who Beck Bennett is.
I don't think I was bragging about that. It's so weird, though. Do you ever watch, like, the College Humor shorts and stuff like that?
Sometimes.
They're original videos. They have a series called Hardly Working. Like, half the people that have been on that are, like, currently writers on SNL.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's like the breeding ground for, like, professional comedy writers.
Interesting.
But, like, the Do It in My Twin Bed one, that was a former College Humor writer. Just like a ton of sketches.
I feel like you're really into the behind the scenes stuff of SNL, but you don't care about the on the scenes SNL.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the same about politics, where like I'm so excited about about the presidential race.
But not about who's going to be the president.
No, but like I don't care about like what Obama's currently doing as president.
Oh.
Which is essentially the same thing.
Sure.
But like, I don't know. The president doesn't matter that much. I just like watching a horse race.
Right. Yeah. I get that. For politics, for an entertainment show, it's a little strange.
Okay. Do you know what's really weird? I haven't watched that Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip show.
That is weird, all things considered. Not that it's a good show, but, you know.
Like, I love West Wing.
Yeah.
I love SNL. I don't know. I feel like... Anyways.
Poor Aaron Sorkin.
Should we get into it? Or is there anything else? The opening politics stuff.
Yeah, the Republican debate.
Jay Farrow playing Ben Carson. I really didn't like that. I think that they did a really... Obviously, Daryl Hammond's Trump is good.
Yeah.
And I think that...
I think with his Trump, though, it doesn't seem as much like he's, like, making decisions. He kind of just has, like, a good Trump, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine. It lives and dies by the writing at that
point. He's not doing a lot with it.
No, yeah. I think if you're with Jay, the one thing that you can give him credit for is that he's making decisions.
He's making... Yeah, okay. I'll give him credit for making decisions. I think he's making bad decisions with Ben Carson. who's Beck Bennett playing again?
He's Jeb Bush.
Yeah, I think his Jeb Bush is terrible. If you would have like had him talking and not had Jeb Bush under it, I wouldn't have known who he was supposed to be. And I think I have that complaint for almost everyone except maybe Moynihan as Christie and Daryl Hammond as Trump.
Yeah. So, yeah, I see what you're saying about, like, Pete Davidson as, Rubio?
Pete Davidson seemed like he was about to break character any second, even though he had, like, nothing funny to say.
I know.
I like Pete Davidson as a stand-up a lot, and I think when he shows up in sketches, he can do good stuff.
Yeah.
But he also...
He's not an impressionist.
Yeah, I just don't think he's that good of an actor.
No.
Agreed. But then again, when I feel like he reminds me a lot of Sandberg when he came on the show.
Yeah, I can see that.
And Andy Sandberg like improved a lot over the course of the show and like got some acting chops. So hopefully we'll see this we'll see the same thing out of him.
Yeah. I don't think he's in danger of being cut or anything like that.
I don't think so. I think he's super likable and that's like his main thing that's keeping him on.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think with the Jeb Bush impression that they're doing though is like it's really strange, you know, because with Will Ferrell's George Bush, right? It's also not a great impression. He kind of just squints his eyes, speaks vaguely Southern, and says dumb stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With Beck Bennett, a lot of it's kind of similar. He doesn't squint his eyes and like speak vaguely Southern, but what they're playing into is his dynamic with Trump, and kind of like his impression is informed by his political standing, not actually his personality.
Yeah, I hear you.
Which is strange, and I get why that's not. I don't know. I get why like he might not like that. I don't love it, but I think it's fine.
Yeah, I know that who's doing Hillary again? What's her name?
Oh, Crazy Eyes, Kate McKinnon.
Kate McKinnon. I love her. I think she does a good Hillary.
Kate Crazy Eyes McKinnon.
But I'm just nervous when, primaries are over. And yep. I'm worried that SNL isn't going to have a good Republican impression of a candidate.
Maybe. Although, once the primary is over, like, the Democrats have the benefit of really only having two candidates that anyone actually cares about.
So do you think that they'll consolidate and like find who's going to be the good ones? Like,
well, that's the thing is they can,
like Ben Carson should have been played by Keenan. Keenan would have done a much better job with that.
Maybe. I don't know. I honestly don't know about that.
I mean, I would trust Keenan with playing literally anyone on that stage. He could do Bernie Sanders, and I'm sure it'd be amazing.
You really love Keenan.
I mean, who doesn't like Keenan? Do you not like Keenan?
No, I enjoy Keenan. The one thing about Keenan that I've seen that I kind of can't shake is that a lot of his comedic sensibilities kind of seem very samey sometimes.
Okay. Like,
it doesn't really matter the character that he plays. He still kind of has similar affectations, you know?
Yeah, but it's a great affectation.
Oh yeah, it's enjoyable to watch. It just kind of makes it very Keenan-y, which is fine sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say here, but sorry.
Oh no, I was going on a total tangent. Keep going.
I was just gonna say with the Republican candidates, once we narrow it down to one guy, that person is probably going to go into panic mode, be like, okay, I got to refine this impression.
Yeah. They
refine it. But then also we can start having sketches dedicated to like one candidate at a time, you know?
Yeah. Oh man. We should start having polls, not to see who's going to be the next, who's going to be the presidential candidates, but who's going to be the impressionist for the presidential candidates.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, because like you need to look at the polls to see who's likely to be president, and then to be like, well, who could do a good, like, who could do a dead? I feel like who does Ted Cruz again?
Oh.
Is that Taron Killam?
Is it?
I feel like I think whoever was doing Marco Rubio was doing a pretty decent job.
I think Rubio is Pete Davidson.
Oh wait, never mind then. That's not accurate.
Yeah, I think Taron is Ted Cruz.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like Taron could do any of them as well. Taron's a good, Taron's consistently, like, good at political stuff.
Yeah, okay,
yeah. Didn't he do Romney?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, now that Suds is gone.
Sudeikis.
Yeah. Oh, I have one more SNL thing.
Oh, yeah?
This isn't even topical, but I was having a conversation with some friends a little bit ago, and they were saying, and someone mentioned how there's a Women of SNL dance that they consistently do for laughs.
What?
You can catch in many episodes. Think Kristen Wiig.
Yeah.
Raising her shoulders up and down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, I see it.
That just kind of crazy dance move?
Yep.
That's like been done by so many SNL ladies, and I don't know who came up with it, but I'm interested in the origin on that because I feel like it's a common thing.
It's a real anthropological quandary.
Yeah. All right. Well, I feel like we've definitely ran out of SNL things to talk about.
Just you wait. In five minutes, we'll be right back into it.
I'd love to talk more about SNL. But no, let's keep talking about SNL. what else is there?
Cecily Strong had a Vanity Fair interview. I didn't read it.
But did I tell you my... I don't know if I said this on the podcast, but the story of my friend who met Cecily Strong?
Yeah, and then... they smoked weed together.
Yeah, did I say that on the podcast or?
I don't think so. Sorry to blow the punchline.
Oh man, no, but it's better than that. But yeah, it was actually my friend's dad was bragging to me that he smoked weed with Cecily
Michael
Strong.
Bryan and his girlfriend. Right?
No, man, you missed the that's the punchline of it. Is the fact that he was like, I was talking about SNL or whatever, and he was like. Yeah, you know Cecily Strong? And I was like, absolutely. And he goes, I was in someplace or somewhere, and I smoked up with Cecily and her boyfriend. And I was like, whoa! You got to hang out with Mike O'Brien? And he was like, who's Mike O'Brien? I was like, that's the boyfriend of Cecily Strong. I don't care. But like, I'm a huge Cecily Strong fan, but if Cecily Strong and Mike O'Brien are in the room, I'm not talking to Cecily Strong. Because I'm too busy talking to Mike O'Brien. Mike O'Brien, I'm so into Mike O'Brien.
100%.
Yeah. But yeah, so like his story was like that he smoked weed with Cecily Strong, but he didn't even know that his story was better than that.
Yeah.
I'm jealous. I want to hang out with Mike O'Brien. I want to meet Mike O'Brien. Do you think we could get Mike O'Brien on the show?
God, no.
Yeah. We should. Oh, would you actually want to get either of the dudes from Hollywood Handbook on our show?
Hell yeah.
I feel like we'd be so awkward, though.
I mean, they'd also realize that we're not the best hosts, you know?
Yeah, but also, we would just be having them on as an excuse to like talk to them.
I know.
It would be really not cool.
Well, I mean, we would be up front. We'd be like, hey, we hear you do podcasts. We do a podcast. It's about Twin Peaks. You know, oh, by the way, this is Twin Peeps. It's a show where we talk about Twin Peaks. My name is Kyle.
I'm Michael. I didn't have to say the name of that show, of our show this time, so I didn't get it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. We only have like 5 episodes left on top of this one.
Yeah, let's draw them out.
Yeah.
But then we just, I guess we could like ask him what his history of David Lynch is and stuff like that. But honestly, I just want to talk to him about how good his podcast is. And I know you're in the exact same table as me.
Sure. We've also been talking for literally 24 minutes about Saturday Night Live. So
it's a good show.
And theirs is a good podcast. It wouldn't be too different. So with the SNL talk and the talk about Hollywood Handbook, but we'd like, have about 10 minutes for Twin Peaks.
But then why not just say, hey, Hayes Davenport, do you want to call me on the phone? And then I would just talk to him on the phone.
Just compliment you about your podcast?
Yeah. I think it'd be asking too much just to go into nitty-gritty details. If we were going to do this, we would have to have him just Skype on. We couldn't ask him to record his own end separately. I think that's asking too much.
Maybe.
I think there's too much room for failure. I think we'd have to have him Skype on and we'd have to find a way to separately record Skype.
Maybe. Although
I know it's more work for you.
He's in the entertainment. It's actually not more work. It's very easy to record Skype calls.
He's the talent. He's not the...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we don't have an engineer, Brett, you know?
Yeah.
But what can you do?
Okay. Anyways, let's talk about Twin Peaks.
Ooh, all right.
But if we have the opportunity to talk about SNL, I will not hesitate. I still haven't seen the SNL sketch about Twin Peaks. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's back in the 90s, you know. What's going to be really exciting is when they finally do one for the reboot.
Yeah.
I mean, nice.
Man, we should just have an SNL. We should have an SNL podcast.
If we have an SNL podcast, I refuse to record an episode if you have not seen the episode.
We've never done that for Twin Peaks.
Because you've watched all of the episodes.
Well, I watch it ahead of time.
Yeah. You'd watch them ahead of time for the SNL podcast, right?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe our dynamic is best when you watch the episode and I don't.
Oh, God.
All right. Welcome, Twin Peeps.
I already introduced the show, but yeah. Welcome
back.
Again.
Welcome back.
Vilkeman. Should I summarize this episode? Especially since you don't have notes.
I have no notes.
Man, you are falling apart.
I have a cold.
All right. Summary. Truman drinks away his sorrows. Annie arrives at the R&R. The log lady sits with Garland. Hawk and Coop worry about Truman. Wyndham catches wind of Coop's ploy. Audrey prepares for a banquet and Jack asks her out. Coop shoots straight with Truman about Josie's past. Eckert's assistant gives Catherine a gift. Gerald Craig, a medical school colleague of William Hayward's, visits the Hayward household to deliver a gift. Pete goes over Coop's chess options and teaches Lucy and Andy chess. The log lady and Garland talk symbols with Coop. Jack serenades Audrey on their picnic. Gerald Craig, quote unquote, has been dead for 30 years. Jacoby assesses she who must not be named's faculties in comprehending divorce. Ben Horn visits Donna's mother in secret. Norma tells Shelley to enter the Miss Twin Peaks pageant to disguise Wyndham. Earl agrees. Coop meets Annie. Coop talks Truman down. Mike and Nadine rent a room. Ben's banquet begins. Dick Tremaine hosts a fashion show. Ben chats with Catherine and doubles down on his transformation. The Pine Weasel is unveiled. Jack and Audrey smooch. Eckhart's assistant frames Truman of something. And that's the summary.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So, first things first, how did you like this episode?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I wasn't crazy about it. But yeah. I feel like the show's getting better. It's getting like back to being pretty good.
Yeah, there's definitely an upswing at the end of season two.
I feel like there's some subplots that I thought were interesting, but they weren't handled in the right way necessarily. Like the fashion show, that really comes out of nowhere. And I like that as a plot that's happening.
Yeah.
But like watching like Andy walk on the catwalk and was just like dumb.
Yeah.
So I didn't like parts of that.
Speaking of, that is actually my contender for weirdest scene in that. The entire scene is just very awkward.
Are you talking about the entire, including the ferret part of it?
I'm really focused on the fashion show element of it. The ferret getting out, it has its own problems, but I think the fashion show is worse. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, my roommate walked in while I was watching the that part.
The ferret getting out?
Yeah.
Not the ferret, the pine weasel. What are we doing?
But it's a type of ferret.
It's a pine weasel.
No, but they say it's a type of ferret,
though. It's a pine weasel.
All right.
All right. Did you quickly slam your laptop shut?
No, I had it on the TV. And he was like, this is really weird. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. I'm trying to think of any other weird things. I don't have my list of scenes, so.
Oh, my God.
That was, but like that whole part in general, I like that overall.
Yeah, I agree with you.
In there's that. I like the scene. I like the sub scene, I guess, of it, where Martell is talking to Ben Horn.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, and Ben, and she's like, "You can't be serious about this." And Ben's like, "Oh, I am serious. I'm a changed man."
And they're like laughing and stuff like that. But then he asks her to cut him a big check.
Yeah.
Which it like I is he actually changed?
It's still unclear, you know. Catherine doesn't think so, but
like he asked her for a check. I think that implies that
it's a fundraiser.
Yeah, but he like I don't know. I'm unsure.
Well, that's the point. It's a little bit ambiguous still, you know.
Yeah. You know what? I'm just gonna go to the Wikipedia page. I want to see the list of. What?
I will say I like this line. Catherine asks Ben, you know, "Hey, is this for real? Why are you doing this?" And he's like, "It's the first scrubbing of one of the dirtiest mines in the like either the Pacific Northwest or Twin Peaks."
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "Oh yeah, that's good. That's a good line."
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that like made me smile, and that like I enjoyed in it. So that's. Overall, yeah, it was a good episode. Hold on. Sorry, I got to find the episode now. Wait, so as far as, like, the fashion stuff, what's the worst part about that?
So for me, it seems like kind of like a shark jumping moment a little bit. It's something that is out of... Yeah, it feels tonally weird, you know, to mm-hmm. have Andy and Lucy be models, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, here are these characters. Let's make them do something that's kind of wacky and fun, but it's not really in the vein of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I can't find any summaries of the episode. That's annoying.
Really?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of anything weirder than that. There's a scene with Leo and what's his face?
Wyndham Earle. Yeah.
And
Wyndham Earle's freaking out because he's realizing that Cooper is trying to play a stalemate game.
Yeah. So I remember him hitting him with the paper.
Yeah. He freaks out basically.
I thought that was pretty weird. But yeah, I think you got to give it to the fashion show as the weirdest scene, specifically when a ferret is landing in someone's salad.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, generally speaking, it's not actually that weird of an episode, you know?
Yeah. I think the show is definitely found its footing. It's getting better.
Yeah. I will say there are going to be some weird scenes coming up.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So on to weirdest character, I'm gonna have to double down with Wyndham Earle.
I actually agree with you this time.
One thing, so now we've seen it a little before of Wyndham Earle dressing up in costumes.
He goes full blast on the costume game this episode.
But in this episode, you're like, oh, Wyndham Earle is a guy who wears a bunch of costumes. I think we've seen him in like maybe like two or three costumes. But in this episode, I think he's in three different costumes.
He's definitely in two.
He's the biker. The yep. biker with all the tattoos and stuff like that and a big fake mustache. And,
yeah.
Oh, man. He's the doctor's friend of... he's a doctor friend of...
Papa
Donna's
Hayward.
Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of Doc Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
And is he anyone else? Is that it?
I think that's it, but that's still okay. More costumes than we usually see him in.
Yeah. So now I'm realizing, oh, he's a guy who, like... dresses up in a bunch of costumes, and they're really elaborate costumes.
Right.
Like, what's, he lives in the woods, but, like, he must spend a lot of time, like, doing makeup and, you know, getting ready.
What's also weird is that there really is, like, when you think about it, there really is no point in the biker costume. Because,
yeah.
So he goes to the Hayward house, he talks with Donna.
Yeah, no one there knows who he is.
Yep, no one knows. It's not until way later when, the Hayward parents actually come back And Donna's like, hey, this guy was here. And, oh, this guy's been dead for 30 years. And then...
thank you for delivering it like that.
You're welcome. I wish I did it during the summary. But he could... if I remember correctly, the scene in the R&R happens in the meantime, right?
Yeah.
So he could just go to the R&R still in costume. It's very likely that this guy would get a burger.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's for plot convenience, the fact that Coop's there. They can do the whole him suddenly disappearing without even touching his burger.
No, but that's the thing, is it's already as convenient because he's still in costume. Coop, mm-hmm. like, Donna has but a like contact.
His other costume wasn't as good.
Huh?
His doctor costume wasn't very good. I think Coop would have seen him and instantly been like, oh, hey, Wyndham.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's already established that when he's in costume, he's completely incognito, even if we as viewers can understand or, like, can see through it. So mm-hmm. I think if he's wearing, you know, if he has like the white hair, he's wearing the mustache, he's got the hat, because he was still wearing a mustache as Gerald Craig.
I don't think it was, I don't think it was as good of a costume as the biker one. You're not going to really convince me otherwise.
I just, it seems unnecessary, you know, or mm-hmm. just add one new element to the Gerald Craig costume. You don't need to be a biker.
Yeah. No, I love that they did that, though. I mean, it's a little over the top, but but yeah, so I got to give it to him. He's so weird. I wasn't totally on board with it, but now that I'm realizing how crazy he is, he's a great villain. I love it.
Yeah. No, he's one of the pleasant surprises of season two, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he starts off and you're like, okay, who's this guy? But then, you know, things start to ramp up and he becomes ridiculous, but kind of in a good way.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know.
I guess we've gone to bad, but not David Lynch.
Yeah. So I'm going to kind of break a central tenant that we have and double dip.
Ooh, I have one that we haven't used yet, but go for it.
Well, I was just going to say the fashion show for the shark jumping reasons that I said later. Yeah. Although, for my battered, but not David Lynch, I kind of focused on the ballroom blitz thing that happens with the weasel.
Yeah.
Just because I focused on the fashion show earlier. But
yeah,
it's just tonally weird for the show. It's very campy, very slapstick.
Yeah.
It seems
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Continue.
I was just going to say, it seems like the Benny Hill theme should be playing underneath it.
Probably.
Yeah.
My bad, but not David Lynch, was a scene I actually kind of liked, but I know it's bad. And that is the scene with Nadine and Mike checking into a hotel room.
Yeah. It's a fun joke.
It knows it's cornball, but it's like really aggressively cornball.
Yes.
And then, like, he's wearing a suit. Like, he's a bigger, older guy, you know? Like, in real life.
He's a guy who should not be playing a high schooler, but he is.
Yeah. So then he's playing a high schooler pretend to be an older guy. So his suit's, like, super baggy on him, even though he's, like, probably, like, 6'2". And running into the high school students, I actually like this scene, but it's objectively bad.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I'm of a similar opinion.
I also don't know why they're lying.
It's pretty common knowledge to most people. It feels like it's 100% Mike's idea.
Yeah, but why doesn't he just say you should get the room? You're 35, 40 or whatever.
Yeah, he. Yeah, but then we'd miss out on this hilarious bit.
That's true.
You know?
But this isn't like what... David Lynch wouldn't want this. If David Lynch was in the writer's room, he would have fought very hard against this.
Yeah.
It's just like too slapsticky.
Yeah. I mean, that's the same thing with the ballroom scene, you know.
Yeah.
The dinner scene is, I don't know, what's nice is that David Lynch will be coming back soon.
Yeah, that's what I hear. I'm excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess moving on to worst police work. I feel like this one's pretty obvious. It turns out I remember more of this episode than I thought I would. I'm remembering the scene with Truman and... So there's a few different scenes with Truman that are supposed to take place at different times, but you can tell they definitely filmed them all right in a row.
Well, yeah.
Of him with a 5 o'clock shadow to show how depressed he is. Because as we all know, depression manifests first in a 5 o'clock shadow.
Yep.
And a almost empty bottle of Jack Daniels.
Yes.
In uniform.
Right.
With his gun out.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I think Truman has won by far the most worst police work nominations
over
the series.
He's like waving his gun around.
Yeah.
And it's like so out of character for Truman.
Yeah. It's
like he's always seemed to be like a really in control guy. We know he had feelings for Josie.
Well, he and Josie were dating. Like, it's to say that they're just feelings, I think, is a little dismissive.
No, I'm saying, but they're still feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
His history. Which is a feeling.
Sure.
But like the fact that he would get drunk and like wave a gun around.
Yeah.
Is really out of character for him.
Yeah, I think. Again, probably wouldn't be something that David Lynch would do if he was in the writer's room. Yeah. I don't mind that they make him depressed because that is very much, you know, it's understandable.
Yeah.
But
do you think David Lynch is going to find a way to retcon the entire second season in the in the new show? Was he involved with Fire Walk With Me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fire Walk With Me is all him.
But that's a prequel, right?
It's largely a prequel, but it technically bookends the series.
How do you know this, but you haven't seen it?
Because I looked it up on Wikipedia. I was like,
"You're like me and SNL,
huh?
You're like me and SNL."
I have not seen one thing. You have not seen an entire season.
Well, yeah, that's a thing. It's just a very broad thing.
Oh, good.
But yeah, I think we're both going to agree that.
Well, plus we also are going to watch Fire Walk With Me for the podcast. So
yeah. I think we should do that one
especially
together.
Now that Bowie has passed away, you gotta do it in his honor.
What does that have to do with anything?
He's in it.
Really?
Yeah, he's Special Agent Philip Jeffries.
No way.
Yep.
Does he have an American accent?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh. You know a lot about this thing, just like I know a lot about the show SNL. You know, I've never seen an actual episode of SNL.
Oh my god. I wouldn't question that.
Yeah.
Angry Truman is strange. He's like,
yeah.
It's like, so I get the choice for the character to be depressed.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about how they do it. It's like so over the top in a lot of ways. And like, there are times when the actor sells it and there are times when he does not sell it.
Yeah. Yeah, who's the actor who plays Truman again?
I believe it's Michael Ontkean.
Is he Canadian?
Maybe. He's Hawaiian now. Shaka bra.
I like, he's not very consistent.
No.
But I think that might be direction too. Like, there's those scenes where, like, he's suddenly super like lusting after Josie.
Yeah.
Like where he's like kissing her shoulder and stuff like that. That's so out of character for him.
Yeah.
Like he's like this super in control guy. I don't know. It'd be weird if, I'd feel just as weird if his coupe was doing it, you know?
I think in defense of those scenes, even though they are weird, like I definitely concede that as much. I think we're in a show that one of the central conceits is that if a character is in love with someone, they can behave wildly different.
That's true.
You know? Okay. That's like the best choice for him. You know, like if I was behind the director's seat, I'd be like, let's turn it down a little bit, guys. But,
very true.
You know,
I guess we should move on to best music cue, and I know exactly what you're going to talk about. You're going to talk about the song that, what's the actor's name again?
Wait, whose name?
The guy who sings the song. What's his name?
Guy who sings the song.
Yeah. There's a song in this episode where,
Tremaine?
No, no.
Wait, how am I forgetting this?
Oh man.
Is it during the fashion show?
No, it's not. What? No, it's a song that someone sings. Oh man, I should have my notes.
There's okay, well, you think about that. The music cue I have is the drinking montage music with the sax filled.
Oh yeah.
Sad jazz.
Very Bill Clinton.
Yes.
Jazzy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was recorded by Bill.
Here's how I'm looking up what actor this is. I just Googled Titanic and I'm on the Wikipedia page.
What? Oh, Billy Zane.
Billy Zane. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. Yeah. He sings to Audrey in The Picnic.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's a part of me that kind of didn't even think about that for the music cue because it's like, it's not, background music. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah,
what did you think of that song?
Huh?
What did you think of that song?
The Old Prairie thing?
Yeah.
It's a little weird for a date, but...
Yeah. I guess it's in the wheelhouse of Twin Peaks stuff.
Yeah, all dates take place on picnics. You're either taking pictures or singing songs.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's also establishing Jack as a country boy who also happens to be a business mogul.
I feel like they're kind of late in trying to establish this. So they're laying it on very thick.
Yeah.
Like when he arrives in a cowboy hat later on.
Yeah. I really wish that they introduced, I was surprised it took this long because it's been a while since I last saw this series.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised it was this late into season two where they introduced Jack Wheeler and Annie, Norma's sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that they had introduced both of them earlier because there's not really, aside from maybe timing issues, there's not really anything that precludes either of them from being inserted earlier.
Yeah. I mean... And especially with Heather Graham, probably not availability because she hadn't really done anything by then.
Oh, God, no. Yeah, she could have. This is one of her first roles.
Yeah. Which I guess I'm not going to. She's not my favorite character and is not my favorite scene. But let's talk about Heather Graham.
Yeah.
She's so pretty.
Yeah.
I don't really know what else to say about her. She doesn't really do that much.
her character is a little... two-dimensional in this episode, yeah. Which is
she looks like she looks like Norma though, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, wow, she's super pretty. I don't know anything else to say.
What more needs to be said, especially since they're clearly setting her up to be a love interest for Coop.
Yeah. They do have that one interaction.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. She seems too young for him though.
Yeah, I think.
And I mean, she was probably 20.
So
she might be one of the youngest actors on the show.
Right. Remember back in the day when Audrey and Coop might have had a thing?
Yeah, that was because he was dating Lara Flynn Boyle.
Right. And so Lara Flynn Boyle was like, hey, I'm not really comfortable with this. And then she was like, Kyle, tell David that you're not uncomfortable or you're not comfortable with this. And Kyle's like, hey, I'm not really comfortable with this. So they basically write in romantic interests for Coop and Audrey. But as Cheryl...
Wait, it was because in real life, Lara Flynn Boyle was jealous of what's-her-face?
Sherilyn Fenn.
Is that accurate?
That is according to Sherilyn Fenn.
That sounds so crazy.
Yeah. But so,
and then there's no way Lara Flynn Boyle's like, well, it's fine if he's dating Heather Graham.
Well, I think it was like, it's fine if he is dating someone, but not someone who is like a mainstay on the cast that we're going to see regularly, you know?
That's such a weird thing.
I'm not saying it's like 100% accurate. That's just what I heard.
I hope it's not true.
But with the other thing that Sherilyn Fenn pointed out is, you know, in regards to this, she said, yeah, the whole thing is ridiculous because I was 26 at the time. Kyle was like 28 at the time. And Heather Graham was like 20 at the time.
Boom. Yeah. She's making my point for me.
Yeah. Heather Graham is younger than Sherilyn Fenn, but they bring her in as a non-high school love interest for Cooper, the actor of whom is 8 years older than her.
And also, they're adults. It's acting.
Yeah.
So is Lara Flynn Boyle crazy? Is that what I'm taking out of this?
Maybe. Who knows?
Okay.
But the one thing I'll give the show credit for, I do think it was a smart move to have Coop not be romantically involved with a high school senior. You know? As we've established, it made David Lynch seem real creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. What does Lara Flynn Boyle do? What's she up to
these days? No one really knows. I don't even know if she's a part of the reboot.
I just Googled her, and I got a Daily Mail article of pictures of her not looking too good. So is she not going to be in the show?
I don't know.
It's just so weird that she wouldn't do the movie. She didn't do Fire Walk With Me when her biggest credit is Twin Peaks.
The thing about that was it was purely scheduling.
Oh.
Yeah. That's not like a whole thing. It's just she wasn't available for the shoot. And David was Donna's not central to, like, the thing about Fire Walk With Me is it's very much focused on Laura and it's focused on the FBI. The townsfolk kind of get, they're there, but they're swept under the rug a lot of it. Yeah. So Donna's not like as central of a character in that. It's more about the FBI and Laura's actual experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's looking like she's not going to be in the new show.
Yeah. I could see it.
Rough for her.
Yeah.
That's probably would be a good get. Is what's her face going to be back in it?
Audrey?
Well, I assume she's in it.
Yeah, Sherilyn Fenn's in it.
Oh, wow. Here's a bigger list of
confirmed
new cast in it. We knew Amanda Seyfried was in it.
Yeah, which is so weird, but I'm excited.
Let me give you some more. Laura Dern.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing about that.
I love Laura Dern.
Yes, she's in a number of Twin Peaks things.
Also, Balthazar Getty.
Okay, thing about Laura Dern. One thing I just want to say.
Yeah.
It bothers me, but...
What bothers you about Laura Dern?
About Laura Dern. It's not actually about Laura Dern, but... let's see. Actually, I want to grab the dates for these. So, Blue Velvet, which she was a part of, a pretty big role in, came out in 1986. And then Jurassic Park comes out in 1993. I guess that is 8 or 7 years. Yeah, that is a little bit. But, all right, so in Blue Velvet, she plays a high schooler, right?
Sure.
In Jurassic Park, she's like 45 years old with two kids.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
She's got a good range.
I mean, she plays them well. It's just ridiculous for casting.
Wait, what does she play a high schooler in again?
Blue Velvet.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, Jurassic Park was you know, 7 years later.
7 years, yeah, but it's, I don't know. I'm guessing, what's the actor's name in Jurassic Park?
There's a lot of actors
in the Jurassic Park. The main dude, his or her husband. He's like,
I want to say the guy from Independence Day who definitely isn't.
Sam Neill?
Sam Neill.
Yeah. Let's see. If I were to Google Sam Neill, I'm going to guess that he is way older than Laura Dern. He's 68. Laura Dern is probably, I want to say,
she's 50. She's like 52.
She's 48.
Wow.
20 years.
Yeah.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, but that means she, I don't know. Anyways.
You hear that, Hollywood? I'm taking you to task.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Wait, I have more people who are going to be in Twin Peaks.
After Balthazar?
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
No one does.
I'm leaving one for last, which you're going to... Jennifer Jason Leigh's in it.
Sweet. I think I heard about that. I don't
know. What do I like her in again? I like her in... I don't know.
She's in a bunch of stuff. Most recently, The Hateful Eight.
Yeah, did you see that?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah. It's... I think you can make an argument that it's problematic in ways, but...
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
You would use that word like that.
Sorry. She's married to Noah Baumbach?
Yeah, she's in the new Charlie Kaufman movie, which I'm excited to see. Anyways.
Oh, yeah, I really want to see that, too.
Yeah, you should stop come motion. Up and see it. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Some dude named Bailey Chase. Robert Knepper, he plays Teabag in Prison Break, which I don't think you've watched.
Great.
But I have. And finally, ready for this one?
Yeah.
Jim Belushi.
But what?
You heard that right.
What?
You heard that right.
Oh, boy. What?
Yeah.
That's strange.
Yeah. Unless someone put him on as like a joke.
Maybe.
What's
what's the source of this?
It's on IMDb too.
Oh. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't be so quick to judge.
But there isn't, between the two of us, there isn't a single thing that we like Jim Belushi in.
No.
But that's just probably Jim Belushi not choosing great stuff.
Right. Yeah. That is a very strange casting.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. I'm going to leave it up to David Lynch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get back to it. Favorite character.
Is it Coop?
No, he doesn't have enough to do.
Yeah, no, same.
Who is my favorite character? Can I give you one that I think you won't let me get away with, but I think it's good?
Fine.
I'm going to go with, hold on. I want to double check something, but, do yours. Tell me yours first.
So my favorite character, I'm, double dipping with weirdest character with Wyndham Earle.
Okay.
I like how they handle his character, especially the part where he goes to the Haywards. I think that really ups the stakes as far as him being a menacing character. Like, we already have seen him, commit murder mm-hmm. by way of this chess game and whatever, but that's kind of abstracted because we don't really see the crime or anything like that. It's kind of,
but now he's like messing in people's lives.
Yeah. He's showing that he has access and he can do these things if he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really just like heightens the stakes, and like the actor's acting in the scene with Donna, I think was really well done. It's both like kind of believable, but also like this underlying current of menace that I really thought kept the tension going of the scene.
Yeah. And like his scene with, Leo too, it's just like, he's just out of control. But yeah, the fact that he's in their house and he's like totally keeping it together.
Yeah.
And like he has this really good, this really creepy thing where it's like a guy that the doctor saw die.
Yeah.
He must have had to do a ton of research to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, and the phone number that he gives them to call is the cemetery.
That's like such a specific, like, he must have had to do a lot of work to see where that guy died. And
yeah, I don't understand what he does for money or food. He just
devotes. I was also wondering how he got that newspaper, because like Leo gives it to him, but Leo can't be walking around the street. He's wanted for murder.
It's a plot hole.
Am I right?
Yeah, this entire series is now ruined.
Yeah. All right, my favorite character is James.
Oh, God damn it.
Because he's gone. Are you going to give that to me?
No.
Okay.
No. I commend you for trying, but no.
Yeah, I'll go with...
Your heart was in the right place.
I'll go with whatever it is. What's his?
You have to be more specific.
I'll go with Windermere.
Okay. For the same reasons, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Hey, is James Marshall going to be in the new show?
I assume so.
Yeah. Oh wow. I'm looking at his personal life.
All right.
On Wikipedia.
Yeah.
He sued in 2010. He sued some pharmaceutical company for $11 million in damages for injuries suffered from taking Accutane.
Huh.
Which I think is an acne drug. Huh. Am I right?
Oh.
Yeah, it's for treating severe acne problems.
Interesting.
And he claims that it derailed his acting career.
Ooh, that's
awesome. Wow. Martin Sheen, Brian Dennehy, what's he from?
Brian Dennehy? I don't know.
And Rob Reiner testified on his behalf.
Oh. Well, there you go. They're just like people, too. They're just like us.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say. They are people too. They are just like us. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, Piper Laurie's gonna be in the show, right?
Piper Laurie I think she passed away, didn't she?
No. 83 years old, still kicking.
What? Yeah, hopefully.
Wow. Her Wikipedia page, she looks so pretty in it.
What's the classic photo of her?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh no, this picture's like 2 years ago.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Anyways.
Yeah, I hope she is. That'd be great.
Yeah. All right. On a favorite scene, what do we got?
I want you to go first with this one.
I guess I'm going to go with the double dip. And I haven't dipped in this scene yet. This is my double dip in there. But the fashion show. I really liked seeing Ben Horn get to talk to, Catherine Martell again.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked their interaction. It was like all this, and then all the chaos goes on.
Yeah.
I know he's like really easy to hate, but, who's the guy who was announcing it again?
Dick Tremaine.
I like Dick Tremaine's part in it. Yeah. I know it's dumb having everyone do the fashion show, but I love that he's doing a fashion show.
Yes.
I like the big pictures of the pine weasels everywhere. Yeah, I thought and I like that it's like something, it's like hero business for Ben Horn to do.
Yeah.
And Audrey's helping, and then at the end Audrey's like whisked away by Billy Zane.
Yeah, it's a great save the girl moment.
Save the Audrey moment. Yeah. What do you got?
So I actually agree. I think the the banquet scene is kind of like the standout scene of this episode. It's the one that, if you were to think mm-hmm. back about this show, it's probably going to be a scene that you remember.
Yeah.
Because it is so kind of weird for the show. But I have a question for you with regards to this scene. How much do you think it would have been improved if Andy and Lucy were not a part of the fashion show? Like, if it was just Dick Tremaine, he found, like, the most attractive Twin Peaks women and was like, these are your models. Audrey's still doing everything. Ben Horn and Catherine have their moment.
But if they played it straight, I would have liked it a lot.
Yeah, they played it straight. Andy and Lucy are not there. That was another thing I didn't remark about this scene, though. It's weird that they're a part of this for the other reason of the people who are potential investors in the Ghostwood project and in the saving of the Pine Weasel, they don't know who this deputy and the receptionist are, right?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
They also said that they're having like a Miss Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Like, it seems like two really similar things.
Yeah.
That they're suddenly introducing in the episode.
Well, Miss Twin... let's see. I think Miss Twin Peaks was introduced in the previous episode, wasn't it?
Okay.
But then...
This wasn't introduced. This was just happening suddenly.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of just like a part of Ben's arc with the Pine Weasel.
Yeah.
And if they had played up that element a little bit more and not had Andy and Lucy be in it and have it more be about Dick Tremaine and Audrey trying to host this banquet,
mm-hmm.
I think it would have been so much, like, even better than what it is, despite it being both of our favorite scenes of the episode.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Totally.
Yeah, some armchair directing and writing and producing.
Absolutely. We should do our own version of Twin Peaks. Oh, man, speaking of which, have you seen the documentary The Wolf Pack yet?
No, you sent me that trailer.
Did you watch the trailer?
Yes.
What do you think of it?
I mean, it looks interesting.
Oh, man, it's so good. I want to talk about it more with you. It's really good.
I mean...
Watch it so we can talk about it on the show next week.
So... Correct me if I'm wrong, right? You've got these four brothers, right?
No. Oh, hold on. Let me give the... Yeah, for the uninitiated, let me give it a summary.
Yeah.
So
it's... Zach Galifianakis, Ed Helms, Bradley Cooper.
All right. No, it's a documentary about these six brothers that live in New York City.
Three of which are the aforementioned actors. Yeah, go on.
This seems like a bit that I would try to do.
You mean the hilarious one?
Wait, are you correcting me because bits I do aren't hilarious?
Take that as you will. I don't really know where I was going with it. But all right, six brothers, they live room style in this apartment, right?
It's self-explanatory, but there's six brothers, ages... Like, you know, with like a 6 or 7 year span apart from each other.
They're the basis for the movie Room. Yeah, go on.
It's very similar to the movie Room. So for the first 20 some years of these kids' lives, they never left a 4-bedroom apartment in the Lower East Side of New York City.
Yeah.
They would leave like to go on a walk or two a year. Some years they wouldn't leave the apartment at all.
Yeah.
And the dad is like very much like a culty guy. The kids, he wanted to raise the kids without like being exposed to like outside culture and all this, a bunch of things in the world. So the kids never watched sports or saw the news or knew how to use a computer or read. They never had access to any of this stuff. All they had access to was movies. For some reason, he cut them off from like every type of culture,
except for like something that is probably the most pervasive as far as mm-hmm. establishing the zeitgeist,
and something that has huge pieces of culture in it. Yeah, because like you see how people talk, and you see how people interact, and you see how people's lives are. So these kids spent like the first 20 years of their lives literally only consuming movies and being around each other, not talking to any other people.
Yeah,
and it's not like it's really weird because when I 5 minutes into it, I was thinking to myself, is the dad in jail? Like, that's got to be. But it sounds like he didn't actually break any laws. He wasn't keeping him prisoner. Like, when they wanted to leave, he would let them leave.
Yeah.
But, like, the parents were saying, if you go outside, you can get killed. New York City is a very dangerous place, right, which it is.
Yeah.
And then in 2001, you know, they could see the World Trade Center from their apartment.
Right.
They see the planes hit it and stuff like that. So
the kids, like, this is what happens when you leave the house.
Yeah. But yes, yeah, so these kids
always leave a note.
Exactly. Actually, yeah, the dad orchestrated that. Right. It was very, but yeah, so they tried, I'll stand by that.
it's a new truth or conspiracy. You have to call up Alex Jones.
Yeah. But, so these kids only ever interacted with the world through movies and to pass time because they were essentially prisoners.
Right.
Like the mom homeschooled them. I have no idea how they got money. I have no idea how the family could afford food and stuff. Like the dad would go out and buy groceries.
Yeah.
But to pass time, they would transcribe movies on like a typewriter. So they'd watch movies and line by line write entire script for them. And then they would act out movies and film them.
Yeah.
According to the director, they've enacted The Dark Knight like 22 times.
So
like the cinematography is terrible, but like they do like acting, like they really didn't put any work in the cinematography. They're kind of like plays. In fact, the brothers wouldn't even watch the movies. It was the process of making them that they really liked.
Yeah. So it's like Be Kind Rewind is what you're saying.
Yeah. Except like,
except most deaf is
a lot more depressing.
Yeah.
I like Be Kind Rewind.
So did I. I'm typically down for Michel Gondry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super, super interesting.
Yeah.
It's like what happens if you don't let people talk to people other than themselves for 20 years.
And movies.
And there's also as much as for some reason you like, a few years ago, you explained to me how much you hated Vice.
Oh, I hate Vice so goddamn much.
And now I hate Vice a lot. And I can't even, like, explain why I don't like Vice.
Right? It's this just amorphous thing of, like, there's something that I don't like about it. I think I kind of explained it those years ago, and I can get into it now. But
well, you explained it to me once, and I can't reiterate it. But every time I see someone liking it on Facebook, if says someone liked an article on from Vice,
yeah,
I roll my eyes and I'm like, oh, Vice,
right?
See, anyways, Vice.
It's also conflicting because I know what you're gonna say because I've seen this. I googled the Wolf Pack.
And yeah, the Wolf Pack goes to Hollywood.
Right, they have like a mini documentary already.
Yeah.
But
you don't see anyone from Vice in it, though, which is a good sign of quality Vice material.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a very conflicting thing with Vice because they do have content that is not being shown other places. And it's not that the content is necessarily like bad. It's how they present it.
Yeah. You just don't like the people that work at Vice.
Well, it's.
It's. I think that's what it is for me.
It's not like even the people filter. Necessarily. It's how they allow themselves to come through their writing and their reporting. They.
Yeah.
It is always kind of like an outsider.
I think it's a reflection of the people that do it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more corrected that statement because. If someone was like a hipster who might work at Vice, but was able to produce content that was less, I'm not even going to say biased, but less just like, there's always like this element or seeming element in Vice of either like mockery, like very subtle mockery, or
like aloofness.
Aloofness and self-importance. If someone worked at Vice who typically was all of that, but was able to remove that from their work, awesome. I don't mind that at all. But as it happens, that just happens to be what pervades most Vice things.
Mm-hmm.
So you can do as much guerrilla journalism as you want if you're not great at reporting it.
Yeah. Remind me not to talk to say the word vice to you on our podcast.
Even out of context.
Yeah. Anyways, they did a little, a short on Vice about them going to Hollywood and meeting a bunch of a few Vice. Famous directors. Ugh. It's literally just footage of them doing interviews with directors.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Are you going to shut down the podcast because I said something on Vice was cool?
Oh, Vice.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, let's wrap up the show. What else?
Who do we care about?
Yeah, let's go through it. I'm interested in Coop and what's Heather Graham's character's name?
Annie.
Yeah. I mean, anything Coop does, I care about. So
yeah.
I'm interested to see that. You as well?
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and say this right off the bat. I'm pretty much on board with everyone at this point.
Huh.
Like, I tried to go through it. There wasn't really a plot line where I was not.
James is gone.
Semi-invested.
Little Nicky's gone.
Who's gone?
Little Nicky.
Yep.
Hasn't been talked about.
Yep.
Andy really only had one scene.
Yeah, and even. So he has the chess game.
Yeah. Like, he was there for a joke in that chess scene.
Right.
Which, oh, that was a, how did we not talk about that scene of Pete with chessboards everywhere? That was great. I love it.
Yeah, and he's going through all of the classic chess moves. And I'm not going to lie, the cute little joke that they have where, so Andy doesn't comprehend.
About how the knight moves?
He doesn't know how the knight moves, which, you know, is a little bit of a stretch. It kind of plays into Andy being an idiot. But then, like, Lucy putting him in check at the end of the scene. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, okay, that's a little hokey, but it's cute. I liked it.
Yeah. No comment.
It's cute, goddamn it.
Sure, it's cute.
Yeah.
James is gone.
Yep.
Little Nicky's gone.
Yep.
That lady that James was with was gone.
Yep.
Do you even remember her name?
Evelyn Marsh.
Oh, wow.
Never nice. Forget.
Is that plot never talked about again?
Oh, yeah. It's done.
Jeez. That was like a 4-episode plot of like someone getting murdered and then it really doesn't matter.
No, not at all.
Boy.
Well, that's what Evelyn I was saying where it was if this rumor that I haven't really been able to find an official confirmation of this is to be believed, but it was intended to be a spinoff for James, and that makes sense, right? Because it would be the first of James's adventures across the
Pacific. Is James seen again?
I don't remember, honestly.
Is he in the show? Or, I'm sorry, the movie?
I think so, yes. Because it was when he and Laura were seeing each other.
Do you know if he's in the new show?
James Marshall?
Yeah.
You asked, and I think he is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I care about everything.
Right? It's surprising to say.
They've dropped a few characters.
Yeah. The only person that's kind of in danger of me not really caring about is like Mike and Nadine, but I care about.
They barely did anything though.
Right.
There isn't enough for me to even not have to care about
and
it.
And
I liked the scene that they did.
Yeah, even though it was a little corny, but it was a bit, and it was a fine bit. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, man.
Good job, Twin Peaks.
Did David Lynch start? Did he get back on the show again?
It was always my understanding that it was like the last 4 episodes that he got back into it.
Maybe they were prepared. They could tell he was coming back, so they got their shit together.
Let me look it up here. Wounds and Scars. Oh, what? God damn it. The first thing that I look at here is, the first thing that pops up in a Google search is Twin Peaks Revisited, a link from The Nerdist. Oh, boy.
Hey, you used to like.
I did.
Nerdist on Facebook.
But it's also, this is our thing, man. This is our thing.
Oh, man.
All right, so.
Should we start an anti-Nerdist podcast?
Huh?
Should we start an anti-Nerdist podcast?
Maybe.
That seems really mean, but it seems like someone should.
I seriously think that most of Hollywood Handbook is just that.
Yeah. Points.
Oh God. Well, so okay. As far as head writers and directors, David Lynch doesn't actually jump fully back on until the very last episode.
I don't know. I feel like this had some of his touch.
Yeah, I think he does have. He jumps back in more for like creative stuff in these last few episodes. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what scars. All right, so let's count here. So next week we'll have On the Wings of Love, episode 25. And then we'll have Variations on Revelations the week after. The Path to the Black Lodge is the one after that. Miss Twin Peaks, one after that. And then Beyond Life and Death.
The penultimate episode is the pageant?
Yep.
Wait, is Wyndham Earl setting up this pageant?
Well, we're going to have to watch.
Was that established?
No, that was not established.
Okay. That'd be because he already set up the thing to get all the girls together.
Oh no, he for sure is not doing the pageant. I honestly don't remember because I thought I remember a character saying that this happened every year, but I might be confusing that with the video game Deadly Premonition, which is highly referential of Twin Peaks.
Someone was talking to me about Deadly Premonition the other day.
It wasn't me?
It was not you.
That's very surprising. Someone was telling
me how much they liked it.
Oh, my God. I love Deadly Premonition.
Yeah, I didn't even know. They were telling me it was like Japanese game where you had to like dry clean your suit, and it was based on Twin Peaks. And I was like, oh, man, you need to talk to Kyle.
Yes. Oh, my God. No, seriously. I have so many thoughts on Deadly Premonition.
I don't remember who I had this conversation with.
Oh, man.
It might have been at a bar or something like that. I'm sorry. But I can't follow up.
Deadly Premonition is fantastic.
I think I do know who it is.
Yeah.
He works at my company. I think he just quit today.
That's too bad. You're just going to have to play it so I can talk about it with you.
Yeah. What is it for again?
PC, PS3 and Xbox 360. I know you don't have any of those.
I don't have any of those.
God damn it.
I got PS4.
It's not for PS4.
All right. All right. Thanks, everyone. Peep on Twinning, everybody.
Yeah, peep on Twinning.
Let's close out the episode with David Lynch telling us his favorite PlayStation 4 game.
My favorite PlayStation 4 game is Star Wars Battlefront. I'm having a really fun time playing with my good friend. I don't have any friends. Hit me up. My PSN ID is, I don't know, whatever. It's fine.
Bye.
Ugh, boy.
Bye. All right.
I'm cutting that out.
Nope.